Hi, welcome back to Agent Insider. I'm your host, Andy. And today I have a guest, special guest with me, Robin Price. Robin, welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So Robin is a realtor down in, Washington, but what areas do you kind of specialize in?
I specialize in Skagit, Whatcom, up here, and Island Counties in North Snohomish.
Okay. So kind of the northwest part of Washington State.
Yes, correct.
North of Seattle.
Right.
So today we wanted to talk a little bit about real estate because that's your wheelhouse. And I had some questions I wanted to kind of just go through. But before we do that, tell me just a little bit about you, Robin. Like, what got you interested in real estate?
You know, I was working in corporate America, doing a lot of traveling, and I got tired of it and decided I wanted to stay closer to home. And my sister, Shelley,
she was on our program a few weeks ago.
My twin sister, she was selling real estate and said, you know what? I think you'd love this.
Okay.
She said, I think you'd really enjoy it. You meet amazing people. It's a lot of fun. So I said, I'm on board. So that's how it started.
So how long ago did you make that change?
It's been almost 7 years now.
Oh, so it's a while. So 7 years. This is 2024. So that'd been 2017. Are you glad you made the change? Oh.
Yes.
Any regrets?
No regrets. I love it. It's not only do you get to know the area that you live in really well, all the back roads and all the little secret fun things that you don't normally see because you're too busy. But you meet some amazing people, mm-hmm. and that's what I really love is, and also the looks on their face when they buy their house, how excited they are, or they sell and they're excited to go to their next part of their life, their next adventure, next journey. And that's been my most favorite part.
Yeah. It's pretty cool that you get to help people. I mean, your home is like one of the biggest assets that most people have. And it's a huge, part of building, wealth and building stability in your family is to buy a home. And I think a lot of people have a hard time knowing where to start. So that's one of the questions I want to ask you about is like, when people are thinking about like, hey, I want to get into the market, this is my first time buying a house. What are some of the big keys that you would say they should really think about?
So, specifically people that it might be their first time buying a home, there's programs out there that most people may or may not be aware of. First time home buyers program, which is through FHA. Also VA has some great programs and conventional loans. And the one wonderful thing about the first time home buyers program is that there is what's called the bond program. And it helps that first-time home buyer take a chunk of money, maybe their closing costs or their down payment, and they get that gifted. It does need to get paid back, but it sits at the back of the loan. It doesn't accumulate interest, and it's paid off after you sell the house.
Oh, okay.
So it just sits there. Yeah.
So it's just like it's a loan, but you're not paying the loan back.
Correct. It gets paid off once you sell the house.
And it doesn't accumulate interest ever?
No.
Mm-mm. Is that just for first-time home buyers?
It is.
Well, that's still pretty cool, though.
It's really cool. And a lot of people aren't aware of it. They think they have to have a big, giant payment down. And sometimes you do. It just depends on what type of loan you get.
Right.
So I always recommend the first thing you do if you want to buy a home is contact a good lender.
So would you say contact a lender before contact a realtor?
I would recommend it, yes.
Okay.
And the reason for that is you know, it's a time of your life that you're kind of dreaming, you know, mm-hmm. you want to have this amazing, beautiful place that's perfect. And really to understand what you can afford is key. You don't want to go look at houses that are above your budget.
Right.
Yeah. It causes a lot of disappointment.
Right, because you get your heart set on this house.
Yes, exactly.
And then you go, oh yeah, well, we can only afford the garage of that house.
Exactly. So. And, you know, I one of the first things I do with my clients is sit down and talk about what it is that they want to buy, what their must-haves, what their maybe we could do without, but we would like this. And so we can narrow that search down. And of course, the most important thing is their budget, and to make sure that they are aware of first-time home buyer programs or programs that they may qualify that they're not aware of. And then the second thing would be to, like I said, sit down, go over what their dream is, and then figure out what area we're going to do to search.
So I want to just rewind just a second, because you said the first thing you think they should do is go contact a lender, a good lender. Now, you said a good lender. So what would be the red flags for a bad lender or the green flags of a good lender that you would suggest they look for?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm not saying there's bad lenders, but I think communication is key, mm-hmm. as you know, in your business. Mm-hmm. Without communicating with your clients, they can feel that they're not getting their information, or they're left with so many questions, they don't know where to start. And so that is, especially with money, because that's, as you mentioned, one of your biggest investments you'll ever make. You want to make sure that your lender understands what your budget is, so there's no last minute issues. Plus, there's important things like when you buy a house, you don't want to go buy a truck. Or go out and invest money in something, and then it'll affect your
credit score.
Yep. And your debt to income ratio.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. The debt to income ratio is a big deal. We were just helping a customer yesterday, and this morning I was talking with one of our agents because they were so tight on their debt to income ratio that they were like, can you do anything to get the insurance? I think we needed $120 cheaper in order to qualify for their loan. And so I was like, man, like we could do this, but we need to revisit this in the future because you want to make sure the insurance is set up well, and skimping by $120. I mean, you got to do what you got to do to get the loan, but that's a good point that people don't think about that, right? Like their things are flowing and easy. And so they're like, let's go buy a car. Let's go do this. And then they're like, okay, now let's go buy a house. And maybe they've either messed up their credit score because they took out too many loans, or their debt to income ratio is off now because they have these loans. And the banks look at it different. It's not just can you afford it all, but they want there to be some breathing room for good reason too, because you know you might get sick and need to take some time off, or something might happen, and you know things get affected. So,
yeah, you're absolutely right, and also things to consider. So when you do find that house and you decide to make an offer on it and it goes through, this is where you come in. A lot of people don't realize that they can choose their own insurance. Typically, they go with whatever the lender recommends, mm-hmm. and it may or may not be cost effective.
Right.
Or they could contact you. Let's say they live in a flood zone, which in our area, it's very common. Mm-hmm. And you probably talk to a lot of people that, you know, skimp on flood insurance, which you don't ever want to do, or don't understand that maybe you can offer a better price.
Yeah, yeah. Flood insurance is a big one because traditionally for a lot of years, the only option you had was the FEMA flood program. And now there's a lot of options. There's a lot more carriers that are offering flood insurance, and those options, I should do a whole episode on flood insurance now that I'm thinking about it, because those options can vary on what types of coverage you get, right? So you can get loss of use coverage on a private carrier policy. You can get replacement cost coverage on your contents. And those things are not available on the FEMA policy. So,
right.
So there's a lot of extra different types of coverages that make a big difference when there's a flood. And we saw that when there here recently in our area, I know recently, 3 years ago, for some people that's recent, other people that's ancient history.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of difference in how those policies paid out. So yeah, for sure on the insurance side, you can skimp and you can save a little bit, but sometimes that little bit of savings costs you a lot when it comes time to make a claim.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, people need to remember their home values increase. So they need to stay on top of that and make sure their insurance matches that increase in their home value. So
yeah.
If they have an issue, they don't end up, you know, not getting it covered.
Yeah. We have these discussion often with customers like, why my rates keep going up? It's like, well, because the cost of your house keeps going up. You know, which you want, right? I mean, ultimately it is an investment. You're like, I want to buy it at, you know, 300,000 and I want to hold on to it for 10 years and I want to sell it for 600,000. Mm-hmm. Well, if that's the case, there's going to have to be an increase in the insurance as well.
Right.
That can't stay stagnant while your values are increasing. And if it does, then there's a problem with your coverage.
So I have a question for you regarding flood insurance. So does it vary depending on, because I know there's 100-year flood, and so there's different zones, mm-hmm. and there's some areas that are more risk than others. Mm-hmm. So how do you typically determine that?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So the FEMA program has finally started to catch up to the 21st century. The private flood insurance for the last probably 5, 6, 7 years that they've been very dominant in the insurance space, they used topographic mapping and they used satellite mapping to place where the house is, but then also they can look at the satellite view of the topographical area to know how the water flows when there is a flooding event. And so then they base it off of that. So you might be next door to somebody and be paying a significantly different rate based on how the water's projected to flow through that area. FEMA traditionally would use just like they had their grid of flood zones. So there's an AE flood zone. And these are still applicable, the AE flood zone, the A flood zone, AO, and then C and X. Are the most common ones. X flood zone would mean that it's a low risk and the lender would not require you to carry flood insurance. Technically, everybody's in a flood zone. It's just how risky is the flood zone.
Right.
The AE and the A flood zones are the flood zones that the carrier or the mortgage companies are going to require you to have flood insurance. So if you fall inside of that, then traditionally FEMA would make you go get a, and you can still do this, go get a elevation certificate, which measures the base flood elevation for your area and then measures what your elevation of your house is in comparison to that. And it's not bad. It's worked well for years, but the topographical mapping definitely makes a more accurate rating because they can see, you know, there's contours that even though you might be at base flood level, but because of the way the land around you is contoured, you're probably not going to get flooded, so it reduces your rates. And then we've had other people that they were elevated, but because of where they fell in that, they were actually being charged more because they're in the pathway of the floodwaters. So all those things play into effect where you're going to have somebody in the same neighborhood could have very different rates of their flood insurance. And each carrier rates slightly different as well. So when I was talking about those private carriers, so when we do flood insurance now, we usually rate it out with about 4 carriers. That gives us a pretty good spread of who is charging what for what risk. And one of those carriers we look at is always the FEMA one as well. So that way you can kind of go, okay, which one makes the most sense? And then what coverages are important to you? Because that's going to affect which carrier you want as well. Because if you want a good package, you might have to go with a different carrier, even though it's more expensive. So there's a lot of different, very unique and nuanced differences between the rating systems and the coverages, but they make big difference when there's a claim.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I know when I'm working with buyers and they are looking in flood areas, I always recommend getting a flood certification if you want to put an offer during that feasibility timeline to check that out so you know how often it floods. Predicted, it's all predicted.
Right. It's a prediction. But that's a really good point too, because the current homeowner may not carry flood insurance. Right. And maybe they were before it was in a flood zone X and their mortgage company didn't require it, but now it's been rezoned because FEMA goes through and rezones every few years. And so it could be that now it's been rezoned to an AE and you will be required. And that could add an extra $100 a month to the cost of the home to have to carry flood insurance.
Exactly. And also it could be reduced, you know, and as you said, FEMA changes, they do the same thing with wetlands. So, you know, you go in and you buy a property, there might be wetlands on the property and things start drying up and then they disappear. Mm-hmm. And it's very common. And then they reevaluate the property and discover that that's no longer a wetland area, which is kind of nice. But,
yeah. So fast forward, we pick our lender, found someone who communicates well, somebody who's making good recommendations about different programs that are available, someone who's asking me lots of questions and then has a clear path for me to go forward to get my lending done.
Right.
And then next step is to find a good realtor. Now, obviously, we're going to find you. But besides finding Robin, what things should we be looking at when we're talking about looking for a realtor?
That's a really good question. You want a real estate agent that has access to a lot of resources. The company I work for, eXp Realty, actually is they were originally a tech company. And so rather than being franchises, it's just one big company under one big umbrella. And they brought all that tech in, which is fabulous because you have access to properties that haven't gone on the market yet.
Oh, okay.
So, and also I have access, this is something that I do unique. If a buyer finds a property that they like and it may or may not be listed, I'll call the owner and see if they want to sell or if they're interested in selling. The other thing is, again, communication. And with that lender, you typically I set up a conversation with the lender as well because I want them to be ready if we have an offer to do a pre-qualification letter.
Mm-hmm.
And as the lender is working with the buyer, I also request that they start the process of getting them underwritten because it speeds, if there's competition, it speeds the process up.
Mm-hmm.
And all they need to do is find a house. They got the money. It's all ready. They just need to match it with an address.
Right.
So it saves a lot of time and energy. Yeah.
So finding a realtor that has resources, mm-hmm. finding a realtor who's listening, communicating.
Yes.
And helping bring together the team of like how are all the pieces fitting, the insurance, the mortgage broker or lender, and making sure that everything's so you're kind of looking for someone who's going to act as your quarterback through that process.
Exactly. And also if it's a septic system or well, going to the county. So there's like 100 things that we do as agents. And I think the key really is communicating and understanding what that buyer's looking for so you're not wasting everybody's time and helping them be realistic about, you know, their price point and showing them homes that are within their reach and not trying to show them houses that they can't afford.
Right.
I think that's really important. I've seen people do that and I frown on it because how disappointing, you know, you mm-hmm. fall in love with this house. It's on TV. You know, you see it all the time with these real estate shows on TV and they show them these really amazing houses and then say, sorry, you can't afford it.
Yeah. Right. We just want to see you heartbroken.
Yeah.
Face.
We just want you to cry. So, yeah.
We had that, my wife and I, when we were first looking for a house, we were young, we were 20 years old and we were like, let's go buy our first house. And we talked to a realtor and he had us get pre-qualified with his lender. And we had told him like, hey, this is what we want to spend for our home.
Good.
And we qualified for more.
Mm-hmm.
And so he would only show us dumps that were in the in our ballpark of what we wanted to spend. And like one of them had standing water in the kitchen. And I was like, this is horrible.
Why would you even show that?
Right. But then he would show us these beautiful houses that were at the top end of what we were qualified for. And so I was super frustrated because I was like, this guy's just wanting us to buy a more expensive house.
Right.
And so we ended up not, we ended up firing him.
Going, moving. I think that was a good move.
We found our house. We love our house. We've been in it for 24 years.
Nice.
But it is something like finding that realtor who wants to work with you and not just look for the best commission out of you definitely is a big deal.
Well, and it's all about the monthly payment.
Mm-hmm.
What's affordable, what you're comfortable with. You might qualify for a lot more, but is that payment really comfortable for you?
Right. Is that going to put you in a hard spot?
It's got to make sense. Yeah.
So with that, I kind of was interested to get your take because there was some new there's some new laws that are coming into play for the real estate market or for realtors. What does that entail and how does that affect the consumers?
Fortunately, Washington State has been really awesome. Our Realtor Association has been amazing and kind of being ahead of it. Mm-hmm. So we've already been working in that realm. We've had a couple of adjustments in our forms. Now, this has not passed yet. It won't, until the ink is signed, it's not official. But what's on the table now is basically what's always been there. You've always been able to negotiate your commission. There's never been a set commission.
Mm-hmm.
And the seller has always had the option of providing a commission to a buyer's agent to get them to come to their property. And how it is originally set up is that the commission actually goes to the selling broker.
Mm-hmm.
So my brokerage is the one that's getting the commission. They take that commission, they give me my portion, and then I share that with the buyer's agent.
Oh, okay.
So the difference is with a new lawsuit, they're going, and we also post that shared amount on the MLS.
Okay. Is that's always been?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, well, not always. It was a little different, but that's how it is right now.
Okay.
So the changes that, and we're already using the new forms, is that the buyer, so the seller has the option of paying like they always did, but it won't be posted on the MLS. We will have other areas to post it, what they're offering for commission. So it's really going to be a little confusing for buyers. And then prior to that, we've always been required to have a buyer contract.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll still be in place, but it looks a little different.
Okay.
So now the way it's written is that if there is no commission offered, then the buyer, the buyer's agent, sorry, I'm messing this up. So let's back up.
I didn't warn you. I was going to ask you this question.
Yeah. Okay. So
she's like, jerk.
No, that's fine. He can cut it out. And then, yeah. So the new buyer contract actually has a commission out for that buyer's agent. So if the seller's not offering anything, then it's pre-agreed upon with the buyer what that commission looks like.
Okay. So if I was, I'm buying a new home. If I was a buyer, I would have a contract with you as my agent that says, hey, I'm going to pay you 3% or 3.5%. And if the seller doesn't pay it, then I'm going to pay it.
Correct.
Okay.
However, everything's negotiable.
Sure.
So if it's an uncomfortable amount for the buyer because they're paying closing costs, they're paying down payment, they're paying escrow fees. So there's a lot of money going out.
Mm-hmm.
So the buyer has the option of not looking at homes that don't offer that.
Right.
If it isn't in their budget.
Right.
And I know I heard today FHA, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are reviewing that right now. And they are considering allowing that to be outside the loan right now. It can cause a problem with getting a loan if the buyer ends up having to pay commission.
Right.
So the whole industry is shifting. And I guess I'm looking at that like it's every industry shifts.
Mm-hmm.
So you either have to roll with it and work within that shift or get out.
Yeah, but it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like it's minor shifts, especially for here in Washington, where a lot of it, like you said, a lot of that's already been at play.
Right.
So maybe it changes the way the disclosure happens, but it doesn't really change what the function of things right. happening.
And I think it's really important to be with an agent that, you know, and this is another really important thing, is you want to make sure your agent's well-trained in all the new updates and all the new forms. And we have a legal lady that does videos, plus our brokerage offers classes. Hmm. So I'm always taking classes constantly just to make sure I'm updated on current things. And also because I want to be upfront if something is going to happen like this.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, I think that's really important, because I think it's going to be confusing for somebody who hasn't been trained.
Yeah, no, I think that's super true. There's each area of your life is so complicated. It's difficult to stay on top of everything. So a good example of this for us is I had an old boss, and he's an insurance guy. He'd been an insurance guy for basically his whole life. And he had a building that he operated his insurance business out of. And it was needing to be painted. So he's out there painting it in the evenings and on the weekend. And he'd been out there for like 2 days and was not even like a quarter of the way done with the building.
Mm.
And there's this guy, he's like, the guy came by and he's like, looked like he was like some homeless dude. And he's like, hey, you're doing that wrong. He's like, whatever, man. He's like, no, really. He's like, I'm a painter and you're doing that wrong. He's like, how about this? He's like, I'll paint the building for you today. And here's how much I'll charge you for it. And he's like, you can't paint it in a day. He's like, yeah, I will. He's like, I'll paint it all for you. He said, it'll be done by tomorrow, end of the day. If I'm not done, don't pay me. But if I am and you like the job, this is how much I want to charge.
Wow. Sounds like a great deal.
Right?
Yeah.
And so the guy was like, okay. So end of the next day, the paint job was done. It looked beautiful. He's like, and what I paid him, I think he paid him like $1,000 or something like that to go do it. And he's like, it was good money for him for a day and a half of work. But it was, for me, it was even better money, because I would have been out there for another week or two doing that, right?
Doing it wrong.
The whole point was he realized, like, you have to find what you're good at and do what you're good at.
Yes.
And be willing to hire professionals to do what you're not good at.
Exactly.
And I think that oftentimes, like, we're trying to cut corners, and there's ways and things that you can do. Like, hey, there's some elbow grease you can put in to definitely, you know, save you some money. And there's certain areas you should do that in. Mm-hmm. And then, mow your own grass if you need to, right? Like, do your own, right. But there's certain areas you shouldn't do that in, because there's certain areas that will cost you, to save $1,000 here today is going to cost you $100,000 later.
Exactly. Well, and one of them is negotiation. So that's another key thing, is you want an agent that has been trained to negotiate on your behalf.
Mm-hmm.
Because typically there's going to be several offers on a property, and how do you put yourself in front of everybody else? And
right.
There's ways to do that, and tools that we use and things that you can do to put you in front, and, you know, positioning your offer to look really good.
Mm-hmm.
So that's key when you're, in multi-offer.
So the things we're kind of thinking about when it comes to a realtor then is we're thinking about, we want somebody who's, again, communicating well with me, with my lender, with all of the, with escrow, someone who's can manage that process so I'm not worried about it.
Right.
Somebody who's looking for my best interest, somebody who's understanding taking time to understand what I want, taking time to understand what I'm looking for. And then finding the home that fits my needs and also fits my budget. Somebody who's good at negotiating, because that's typically somebody who is good at listening and understanding, mm-hmm. because then that person is going to be able to help put together an offer that's a win-win for everybody and brings your offer to the front of the line.
Right.
And somebody who's knowledgeable, someone who's taking time to understand the industry, what's going on in the industry, how things are changing, who's educated and doing their continuing education classes, not just trying to breeze through and cut corners. really important things for somebody to think about, and hiring a professional to help you through a complicated process is going to help you get the home you want in the budget that works for you and do it in a quick and efficient way without a lot of stress. It's not going to have so much stress and anxiety on you trying to figure it out on your own.
Exactly. And timelines are key too. Once you sign a contract, the clock starts ticking and there's hidden timelines within the contract that you have to manage. And so those can get tricky if you miss any of them. It can really cause issues.
You can lose earnest money.
You could lose earnest money and you could lose the opportunity to do an inspection.
Right.
Or get something repaired. So, yeah.
So I wanted to ask just slight shift for somebody who's looking at investment properties. So we talked about someone looking as a first-time home buyer. Mm-hmm. Someone who's looking at investment property, like, I want to build a portfolio. I want to have passive income, which I know it's nothing's ever completely passive, but I want to build some income that's happening out here on the rental market. What is a good way to think about getting started in that? If I don't have any properties yet, it's easy. Like you hear people talk, these real estate tycoons, and they're like, oh, we got this 500 unit, this and blah, blah, blah. I'm just like, I just want to do one.
Right. Right. And I think that's a really good question. And I think it's looking at off-market properties and also properties that may need a little TLC that you can get for a little less. And you've got to willing to put a little elbow grease into it when you're first investing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to get something that's a little more affordable.
Right.
I do work with a lot of clients that flip and also one clients that are looking for multifamily units, and they're very different in what they look for. And I have actually three clients and then another one that has a lot of money. And so it's very, really a lot of fun working with them to see how they each look at things so differently.
Mm.
So the one client that is doing flips, they're looking for, you know, a 3-bedroom, 2-bath rambler in a community by a school that needs new floors. Maybe that needs, the bathroom needs to be remodeled or needs some things that are fairly simple and quick.
Mm-hmm.
And it typically a quick turnaround.
Right.
Yeah.
They just go in, give it a facelift.
Give it a facelift. Yeah. And I always recommend that they dig a little deeper sometimes, because I've been in flip homes where they didn't go under the house, for example, and there was water under the house,
mm-hmm.
things like they didn't take care of that. So somebody who's going to do a really good quality job flipping,
mm-hmm.
because they're going to make more money, mm-hmm. because it's in better condition. And then the gentleman that does multifamily, they're looking for places that are in an area that's or rent is easy to, you know, it's easy to get renters
and high occupancy rate.
Yes. And qualified renters that are going to stay and not stay by not paying their rent.
They'll just stay forever. They just don't charge.
Yeah. You don't need to pay rent. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
So it's just very interesting. And then the gentleman that does the, that's been doing this for a long time, has more money. So he's looking at larger buildings and better condition,
mm-hmm.
so that he doesn't have to repair or do anything. He can just kind of slip in there and buy and take over whatever the
right
unit is. Yeah. So
that's interesting. That's like a fun part of it. I'm sure that's a fun part for you.
Yeah.
Like the first time home buyer is exciting because it's like you're starting this whole journey of life of like, hey, you're establishing something.
Right.
But then the investors are also kind of cool because you get to see like you can build a lot of wealth and a great portfolio through real estate as well. And it can be exciting, I'm sure, to see that growth for people as also.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we have a housing shortage here. So, you know, that's why rent is so high.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I know that we're looking in, Shelley probably talked about the tiny home.
Yep. That we talked, that was most of what we talked about.
Yeah, that she's working on. And, communities like that that are going to be affordable specifically for first-time home buyers, or maybe 55 plus where there's snowbirds. Mm-hmm. They're not all there all the time. We also need housing for traveling nurses and doctors. So a lot of my investors buy property, and Airbnbs are kind of going out because they're of our limited housing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're starting to eliminate Airbnbs. However, we have nurses that are coming in and out, so they can do those short-term rentals doing that, or mid-term rentals.
Right.
Providing housing for nurses and doctors that are coming in the area. So, which I think is great.
Yeah, it's super important. That's a whole other topic, the traveling doctors and nurses, which is interesting also. It is. But.
And also there's a large community that, and I work a lot with sellers that are older and they have a giant house. They just want to move. I have a team that will, you know, help them clean it up, do garage sales for them, sell their antiques if their kids don't want them. Because that seems to be the common thing now where they've saved all this stuff and the kids are like, I don't want any of that.
They're like, but it's precious.
Yes. I've had it in the family for, and they just, you know, don't want it. So, and helping those folks move into a more a more manageable property.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That is important. As time goes on, you don't need 4,000 or 3,500 square feet that you have to clean and a quarter of an acre or half an acre.
Giant lawn that you got to mow. Yeah.
That is a problem. What are you seeing in the real estate industry as far as, do you think things are, everyone's like, are we at the bottom? Is the bottom going to fall out? Right. And I don't know. That's always the question. It feels like people ask.
It is. No, I don't see that happening. I know rates are up.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of buzz about which direction they're going to go. That'll be really interesting to see. It's election year. So typically they go down. I've been hearing the opposite, but I don't know if that's true.
Mm-hmm.
We won't know till we get there.
Right.
But we definitely have a lot of people that are still moving in the area. Seattle, we have a lot of folks moving up north, as you probably have run into from Seattle and other states, California.
Yeah, a lot of people moving out of California.
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, eventually the housing prices in California are going to start dropping because nobody will live there anymore.
I know. Especially in the fire area.
Yeah. Insurance is interesting down there right now. That's for sure.
I bet it is. And I bet it's been affecting it. Insurance here.
It does. Like, so it's the part that's kind of interesting about insurance. So I was telling somebody this the other day, insurance companies have insurance as well. And so it's called reinsurance. So like, for instance, if there's a major event, whoever your carrier is will pay out that first, you know, if there's a big wildfire in an area, they're going to pay out the first $100 million or $200 million. And then there's an insurance company on top of that that picks up the next 100, 200 million. And then there's another layer. So usually there's two layers above your insurance company. And then what happens is those reinsurance companies, they're measuring their losses on a national level. So the hurricanes in that hits Florida, a wildfire that hits California, and a tornado that hits Kansas affects those reinsurance companies in a significant way. And they are going to spread that cost to the underlying carrier. So it would be Farmers or State Farm or Allstate. They're going to spread that cost to them on a nationwide basis. So when they go to buy their reinsurance from that reinsurance carrier, they say, well, we're going to charge you X amount more. And so that premium for their reinsurance dollars for the last 2 years in a row has been about doubled.
Wow.
And so then that's a direct impact to your insurance in Washington. So while your carrier may not be charging you directly for the losses in Florida or California or in Kansas, indirectly they are, because it's affecting the amount that they're paying to buy reinsurance to cover Washington.
So it impacts.
Yeah.
Everyone.
It does. Yeah. It does. And so, and that also, the other part that's interesting is the reinsurance carriers will dictate a lot to you, to the underlying carriers. and they'll come in and say, hey, you have too much risk in this fire line score or in this protection class. Oh. You have to reduce the number of homes you insure there, or we're not going to sell you reinsurance.
Oh, and so what do you find in Washington State falls in that category?
Right now, it's been in Eastern Washington is mm-hmm. where we've seen that. So there's some zip codes in Eastern Washington that have become almost impossible to get insurance for.
Oh.
And so you're buying a surplus lines carrier is what it's called. It's a non-admitted carrier. It's not a domestic carrier. Be like a Lloyd's of London or something mm-hmm. along those lines. And the premiums have gone up from, you know, maybe you were paying $1,500 or $2,000, which seemed like a lot at that point. But now it's $4,000 or $5,000 wow. for those premiums. And that's something that's interesting that people don't think about when they're looking at houses. Like exactly. where you're located, that's going to affect that yeah. premium by a lot. The other thing we've seen just locally was this wasn't affected so much by reinsurance carriers, but something the state has done is the WSRB, Washington State Rating Bureau, goes out and rates the fire departments and they create protection class. So protection class is what insurance companies use as your fire risk. So protection class one would be you're inside of a city, you're within 5 miles of the fire department, and the fire department is, you know, modernized and 24/7 manned. That would be a protection class one.
Okay.
Most fire departments are protection class three because they may not have a full staff 24/7. They have a reduced staff usually overnight or something. And then if you get into volunteer fire departments, you might end up in a protection class seven. If you're too far away from a volunteer fire department, you're going to end up in eight or a nine.
Wow.
And then protection class 10 is basically uninsurable. The fire departments, though, because of budget cuts, what we've seen in Whatcom County is there's been several fire departments that did not pass their annual inspections with the WSRB because they didn't bring certain equipment up to code or up to standard, I should say, or because they don't have enough man hours or they don't have enough man hours to man the station. Oh. And so then it's downgraded the protection class for those homes. Mm-hmm. So they've gone from a protection class six to a protection class nine, which I've seen is about a 30 to 40% jump in their homeowners premiums.
Wow. That's interesting. Yeah. I never knew that.
And so then they call me all angry. Yeah. They're like, why did my rates go up? Yeah. I'm like, unfortunately that part's not me.
Right.
That part's all between you and your fire department. So there's so many of different moving factors, which is just interesting on how the insurance affects homes.
Yeah. And I think, there's so many industries that really, I try and work with like insurance agents and lenders and even solar panel people that anything and everything that has to do with homes and how it could affect the costs.
Right.
And how it impacts the client. So, yeah, that's interesting.
One last thing I wanted to touch on before I let you go, because I know I've been dragging you through the ringer here, but you mentioned before, and I thought this was interesting, something I never thought about before. I think about this when it comes to insurance, but not when it comes to real estate and lending. You mentioned solar panels.
Yes.
So when I talk to customers, I'm like, we have to make sure we have the coverage on the home to cover the solar panels. So that way, if they get damaged, we can fix them. Or if the house is a loss, you'll get those replaced. And I had not thought about it, but you mentioned that most of the time people don't own the solar panels outright on the home.
Right. They're making payments on them. They haven't because they're fairly new.
Right.
And I know that a lot of people are getting them now because of the cost of electricity and we don't know what's happening with all of that. So,
right. And a lot of people think some people might buy them because they feel like they're doing their, they're doing their good deed of reducing emission costs, or some people are doing it because there's tax incentives, lots of different reasons why people do it.
Right.
And then they spread it out on a loan,
correct.
But that loan isn't tied to the house.
No. And so typically what we're finding is either the buyer takes over the loan of the solar panel. So they have to
assume it.
Yep. Correct. They assume the loan or it gets paid off at closing.
Okay.
Which it depends on the whole transaction, what makes more sense for the seller and the buyer. And we would negotiate that during the contract timeline.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's becoming more common.
Yeah, I would imagine it does.
Yeah, a little bit more. I'm surprised how often now.
So that's something, a good little tip, I guess, for people to think about when they're looking at homes.
Yeah.
If it has solar panels, you got to ask some additional questions to know, how is that going to affect the price of the house?
Exactly.
Or am I going to be taking on more debt by buying this house with solar panels? Or are we going to make sure that they get that paid off and I'm not taking any responsibility for it?
Right.
But be careful that that gets addressed.
Right. And it does need to be addressed at the seller side originally to find out what they can, you know, if they can afford to pay it off at closing, and if they can't, if it's going to have to be assumed.
Right.
Yeah. So that, I would think that needs to be disclosed with the listing up front.
Right.
So that buyer knows. But that I definitely ask those questions. Yeah.
So I've done this a couple times, but I just want to try to recap, because we've talked about a lot of different things.
Yes.
So I think the main things I've taken away from our conversation is, if I'm looking to buy a house, first time home buyer, first thing I want to do is talk to a lender, find a lender who communicates well, find a lender who is looking for as many different programs possible, that's looking outside, thinking outside the box, maybe, and helping me manage that process. Also make sure that I'm not going out and buying a bunch of stuff before I go to looking to buy a house.
Exactly.
So don't screw up my debt to income ratio. Don't mess up my credit score.
Yes.
Then I want to look for a real estate agent who is going to be, again, communication seems to be a big key here, but it makes sense because there's confusing. So I want someone who's going to communicate well, someone who's going to be organized and communicate with my lender and title companies, anything that's going on, be able to coordinate all of those things, the timelines, the inspections, and the insurance. All of those pieces need to fit together, and a realtor can help me manage that process. The realtor also is going to be looking and understanding what I'm wanting, what I'm looking for, what my budget is, what my purposes of the purchase are, and then help me find something that fits that. And someone who's obviously ethical, who's someone who has resources, like you mentioned with your brokerage, that you can see homes before they're hitting the listings in Zillow. So a lot of homes, I'm sure, the best homes, I'm sure, are being bought before they're listed, mm-hmm. the best deals.
Right,
So having someone who has those resources, someone who's educated, understands what's changing in the field, and can be on top of their game, I think those are the big keys.
Yes.
The big takeaways.
Yep.
So last thing I wanted to ask you, I never tell anybody, but every time I have a guest now, I ask them this question. If you had something to tell your kids or your grandkids, something that you wanted them to know, it's like, this is the most important thing that you could pass on. What is it that you would say? What piece of advice would you give them?
I would tell them that I love them all unconditionally. Mm-hmm. And that
I know. I like to stump people on it. I apologize. But I think it's important, because it's like,
it's
one of those things, like, because we talk about so many different things and we have a lot of different wide range of topics that we discuss on the podcast. And I think about that as like, it's all the things that I could communicate to my kids. If I only get to pick one, what is it that I want them to know, or my grandkids, what is it that's important for them to understand in life?
That's a tough one. I'd want them to understand how important they are to each other,
mm-hmm.
how important God is in their life, mm-hmm. that they need to have a relationship with God and maintain that, and also trust their gut. I think sometimes we don't trust ourselves, and we make mistakes because we don't listen to that inner voice that's there telling us, hey, stop, don't do that.
That's a dumb idea.
Yeah, don't. And then later you're like, yeah, you were right. That was a really dumb idea. And just, you know, as far as finances and things like that, to live within your means, and don't be afraid to invest. Look at look at investment options. You know, real estate, of course, is one of the best things you can invest in. Mm-hmm. And use that real estate to your advantage. Use the equity in it to your advantage. So, yeah.
So you are a good negotiator. See, I said, give me one thing and you gave me like four. Oh. You said you got to be like, realize how important family is, which yes. I think that is important. I was talking to one of my employees. They just had their first baby. Oh. And he's like, I think we want to have one more. And I was like, I think that's awesome because I think the most important thing you can give your child is a sibling.
Yes.
I think that's the best gift you can give them. So, yeah, important. Family is important. Understand that connection is important. Understand that you're loved and that you're cared about, mm-hmm. that the Lord loves you. And yes. that relationship that you have with the Lord is the most important thing. And that's where you find yes. the most meaning in your life is when yep. you understand who your Creator is and how He loves you.
100%.
And then I think, and then you said, and then invest, be willing to invest and to take some risk and to trust your gut, because your gut's not going to, sometimes you'll get it wrong, but yeah. you will learn, and it's better to trust your gut and take a chance than to live with regret.
Right. And I think making a mistake is actually a good thing.
Yeah.
Because you know, we learn things by emotion. There's usually typically some awful thing that happened or some wonderful thing that happened. And when you attach that emotion, you remember it. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think when you make mistakes and you like really screwed up really bad, you're never going to forget it.
It's true. That's true.
And you won't ever do it again.
That is true. When you really whack your head on
yeah.
something, you're like, oh, be more careful.
Touch the burner. Yeah. Yeah, you're not going to do that twice.
Not going to do it twice. So. Robin, thank you so much for taking time to join me. I really appreciate it. It's had a lot of fun talking about a lot of different topics with you.
Yeah,
so.
It was fun. Thank you.
Yeah.
I learned a lot. Very interesting.
Good, good.
Yeah.
I'm glad that it went both ways. I learn every time. So.
Yeah, that was really, I didn't know that about how insurance was structured.
Yeah, it's interesting. Insurance is complicated.
I don't think most people know that.
No, I don't think so.
That was really eye-opening for me.
Oh, cool.
Fascinating. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys for joining us today. If you have questions, feel free to email me at theagentinsider@gmail.com. And we look forward to talking with you again next time. Till then, have a great day.